Firstly, I want to thank many of you for your indulgence. Despite the fact that we tried to plan several learning programs, sometimes order, sometimes Baruch Hashem, because of the sharing of Torah goes a little longer. Things get a little delayed. I want to particularly thank Rabbi Twersky, Rabbi Sabalowski, and Dr. Pelkowitz for taking time to participate in this very important panel. And again, to thank you, the Talmidim of the Yeshiva, for joining us. We recognize it's Elul, it's a time of really self-reflection and introspection, and that's the reason why we thought it was appropriate to have this conversation during the month of Elul, because this is both the Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, the way we interact with those that we are dating, about to date, eventually will date. And it's also Bein Adam L'Makom, because who we marry will empower our relationships with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Since January, when we launched this YU Connects, which was a way of creating multiple venues to discuss issues of this nature, as well as creating the opportunity for dating connectors in consultation with some of the Rosh Yeshiva, some of them that are sitting on this panel, Rabbi Sabalowski in particular, Dr. Pelkowitz, and of course, Rav Schechter has been involved in some conversations on this issue. Most recently, when we were discussing next year's activities, or the coming year's activities, we have found that over the past year, many of the Shadchanim, many of what we call the dating connectors, have been giving hadracha on a number of issues. Now, some of these issues are not appropriate to discuss in a public context, but many of the issues, we thought a public conversation would be very helpful. And what better way than to have an educational conversation led by mentors of our yeshiva, Rosh Yeshiva, Dr. Pelkowitz, who many of the Rosh Yeshiva, many of us turn for guidance on a host of issues dealing with mental health and our own personal development. This program is created for all. It's created for those who are dating. It's created for those who will eventually date. It's about discussing a more productive, more appropriate, and hopefully a healthier way of thinking about certain issues in the matter of building a relationship with the opposite sex. We are taught in our siftas, and even in some of our co-ed yeshiva high schools, about the appropriate distance from the opposite sex. These ideas are further concretized in our learning in Eretz Yisrael and other venues. And often not discussed is the way to find our Azer Connecto, which makes this conversation all the more critical. So therefore, we thought that what we'll do tonight is, I'm going to pose a few questions to the panel. We'll begin with Rabbi Twersky, then we'll move thus, it was appropriate to wait till the shmooze was over in the Beis Medrash. We're going to continue then move to Rabbi Sabalowski, and then we're going to turn to Dr. Pelkowitz. And with Dr. Pelkowitz, we're going to ask Dr. Pelkowitz two things. Firstly, we're going to ask him to comment on some of the questions that I've already asked the previous two panelists, the Rosh Yeshiva. And then there's a series of questions that we've chosen for Dr. Pelkowitz. So it's my privilege to begin the conversation with Rabbi Twersky. To ask the following set of questions, and for Rabbi Twersky to be able to answer all of them or some of them, whatever he deems appropriate. When is one ready to date, Rabbi Twersky? What are the factors that need to be considered? And I stress a few, not to suggest that these are all of them, but just for our conversation. Does age, is age a factor? Is the stage of our learning, our education a factor? Are issues of financial considerations, parnasa, where we are in our career path, an issue? So the first question is, when is one ready to date? What factors should be considered? And what about this idea of a young man having a plan, some type of understanding of when he will be finished with his studies or finished with his formal learning in the Beis Medrash? And if I could just make things a little bit more complicated, what about the idea of looking towards assistance from one's parents or future in-laws? Is that something that should be perceived as an expectation? And should that be factored into any conversations on this issue? So again, is when is one ready to date? What are the factors that need to be considered? Is there appropriate that the person have a plan? And to discuss a little bit about the notion of assistance from parents, very firstly.
Sure. society, it's very, very, very difficult to be able to do that. Which is where I'm going to go bit out of the border for a moment. In terms of looking towards parents, in-laws now. So, the notion, I think, that once upon a time may be correct and appropriate, which is that if you are sure that you're married, you should be sure enough to be totally and absolutely financially independent, is anachronistic. A person can be insured and ready to get married at age 20, 22, 23, and not be ready to be financially independent until he graduates from law school or medical school or the Indian chief training course at age 24 or 25. So certainly, if either or both sets of parents can facilitate it, it's something which is welcome. It should be very much appreciated, and there shouldn't be any national entitlement. It's not supposed to have any attitude or feeling of entitlement. But certainly, if parental help can bridge that gap between when a person is emotionally ready for marriage and when the individual and the professional tracks in our society, when he's ready to be self-supporting, it's very welcome. What do you do if that support is even not available or not forthcoming? Maybe we'll talk about that a little later, but there's something for Mr. Lawson who would like to comment. You mentioned the career path and having plans. And both of these are excellent examples of the ever in general category for why we postpone marriage so commonly beyond age 20, despite the unequivocal statement in your letter to the contrary, is that I'm not sure that we can quote chapter and verse of the here. But it's inconceivable that the Torah wants us or expects us to get married before we're emotionally ready for that. To put us on a path which isn't headed towards a happy, successful marriage is obviously not what the mitzvah ki ish is about. And it just seems abundantly clear that there has to be an emotional readiness. Part of that emotional readiness is that a person has to have a sense of identity. And part of that sense of identity can be a sense of identity in terms of Hashkafa, where he is ideologically, where he's headed in life. And that's where having a plan. That's where a career path. And just the picture of that, that a person has to be able to cross the T's and dot the I's of what his career plans are. I'm going to go to law school. I'm going to get accepted to Columbia Law School. I'm going to work at the law review. And I'm going to go work in the midtown law firm of Kay Show. I'm going to work in taxation. In 6 years, I'm going to have a partner. Doesn't have to happen. But on the other hand, if you ask him, what is he going to do? What are you interested in? There has to be enough of a plan that it conveys to the other person, to the young lady in the picture, or with respect to the young lady in the picture. And with this, I'm going to conclude that other aspects of the emotional readiness is that a person has to be ready for the relationship, ready for person has to enter dating with a minimum critical level of self-esteem and self-confidence, it can't be the case that because a person has low self-esteem, and as a result, well, if subconsciously, well, if she wants me, then I want her. That's not a good formula for deciding or identifying one's perspective or anything.
How should one go about dating? And I mean, in particular, let's say someone meets someone at a NCSY Shabbaton or Torah tours or at a wedding or maybe even through Wine Connects, or somebody is told about a young lady through a shatzen. How does one go about this dating process? How does one how should one begin the process? What, and in particular, I want to just develop that question a little bit, and that is, who should I take suggestions from? One of my friends comes to me, or my roommate comes to me, or roommates, depending on which dorm you're in, comes to me and makes some suggestions to me. I mean, how critical should I take those suggestions? What about somebody from my family who makes the suggestions? Or what about somebody who just met me for 5 minutes over a Sudas Shabbos? How do I take those suggestions? So the first question I'd like to ask is, how should one go about dating in general? How should one deal with suggestions that are made? And then what about the creation of a list? And I mean two things by that. A list of potential young ladies to go out with. Should I actually keep such a list? There's a reason Rabbi Salosky asked you this question. And should I also, another thing is, should I create a list of what I would consider the midos tovos that I'm looking in a young lady? What are appropriate questions that I should ask someone who suggests a young lady for me to date? And what are the sensitivities or the Torah perspectives that we can adopt as we travel through the dating experience? You have like 5 minutes to answer all those questions. As long as you want, Rabbi. As long as you want.
Member of this panel, so I think I'm in a very unique position. I guess my dating career is the freshness in my mind. Some parts that I'd probably rather forget about, but over the last 14 plus years, since my career officially came to an end, Baruch Hashem, so I've learned a lot of interesting things. And a lot of the discussions that I've had, primarily with Talmidim, often with colleagues, many of them with my wife, so some issues have come to the fore, particularly over the last several years, and I thought I would just share a little bit of a perspective with some things that have really come to my attention, I'm sure many of you are familiar with, things that I think that perhaps we can work a little bit of a tikkun on. From Brenda mentioned, Chodesh El, of course, is an appropriate time for many types of tikkunim, particularly in the realm of tikkun amidos. And I think that as we approach dating, I think it's something that behooves each and every one of us to ask ourselves some of these very pointed questions. How do we go about dating, in a sense, in a way of a Ben Torah, particularly in the way of somebody who hopefully lives up to the standards of somebody who has midos tovos? So there's one particular phenomena that has disturbed me in the past. I've shared this thought with many others, and many have expressed a similar notion. And so I was beginning to chuckle, and Rabbi Brander said the word list, the magic word. And I tell you the honest truth, the list conjures up a certain image in my mind. When my wife asked me to go to Padawan on Friday afternoon, that's what the list is. The list is the Bari Yeshivish phrase, the Lomdish phrase, is usually for Chefzas, not for Gavras. And I think that that's an important distinction. And I think that it goes really to the heart of many, many issues in terms of dating. And sometimes we get so caught up in names and suggestions and lists that we tend to sometimes forget that we're dealing with human beings, particularly with Benos Yisrael, Tznuos, Atahoros, and sometimes even the Lashon, even the lingo that we sometimes use, is not necessarily always appropriate in many, many different fashions. And I think that it's important for us to remember that at the end of the day, there's going to be one person on that. I'm going to use the word list also because I haven't yet coined another phrase. We're still looking if anyone has any ideas. But the person who may be on your list or maybe on somebody else's list is going to be your wife someday. So just don't forget that. And I think that's important in terms of just basic sensitivity, basic human sensitivity. Just meet those toes and how we refer and how we speak about individuals. I think that this notion of sometimes getting so bogged down in the dating process, that we sometimes tend to forget certain basic aspects of Derech Eretz, particularly how we relate not only so much to the person we may be going out with, or perhaps to the person we choose not to go out with, but sometimes to the many, many different people involved, different people who may take the role as formal shadchanim, informal shadchanim, people who really, for the most part, are really out generally to help. I mean, I would venture to say that 99.9% of the suggestions that are given are really given out of mitzvle, but really given for out of the goodness of a person's heart. At the end of the day, they want to see this particular young man, this particular young woman get married. That's basically what it said. I hope we should be dying well chaschus. I think our initial reaction should be, but the suggestion is made also that the person has a genuine interest in mind. Again, the person may not be a good idea. It doesn't mean necessarily that obligates us to go with everybody, but sometimes there's a certain degree of cynicism even and negativity. I mean, there have been times when people have come to me and said, you know, out of real tzimimus, we've suggested somebody, and we were given the following response. Something along the lines of as follows, that how do I know that you're suggesting this because you really have my best interest in mind? Maybe you're just doing it because you care about the other person and you don't really know me and you don't really want anything good for me anyway. Something along that kind of a lashon. Now sometimes those types of responses are articulated, sometimes they're not articulated, sometimes the message is sent. I think that's something that we should be aware of, that basic hakaras hatov. Hakaras hatov is important in all areas of human endeavor. Kal vachomer in this area, we're embarking, hopefully, it's a shem on a relationship with another individual, which make or break that relationship will be the significance of hakaras hatov. So I think it's a good idea to get into the practice of hakaras hatov in the early stages of that relationship, both in terms of how we relate to the person themselves, to other people, etc. So that's a basic mitos, a simple, kamish elementary things, but as we all know, sometimes the elementary things have to be said. If a person commits that they're going to go out on a date, committing meaning that they pick up a phone, they make a phone call, and they speak to a girl, they plan a date, and then, for whatever reason, the phone call, it didn't click on the phone call, so to turn around and say, I'm not going out, the feeling is that it appears to be a serious breach in terms of mitos. We don't know what the other person's, you know, halavai, we had the Ruach HaKodesh, we knew that the other person felt the same way, so then good, everyone can press the button, and they're both in mosque, and everyone got the night off. But it's very often not that way. Very often the other person is expecting to go out. The other person does want to go out, and to call the person back or to leave a message, more likely with a third party, that we're not going to go out, even though after we had said we were, Lachinius 90 really doesn't sit well in terms of Midos. Nice to show you Kachoyin, it was a story that I personally was involved in. This goes back quite a few years, but there was a particular bachur who got himself into one of these pickles that he had called up a girl, and he had set up to go on a date, and he had decided, and after the 10-minute conversation, that she was absolutely b'shum pun of an open night for him, and he wanted to try to avoid going out on a date. So somehow, Ms. Gabu at bar, and I don't know why I ended up becoming the in-between, but the issue was presented to me as to what should we suggest to this boy under these circumstances. So I didn't mix any words, and I said to him, I said, I think it's an alpha, that was my motion. I think that it's an alpha. I said, you call the girl, you said you're going to go out with her, and now you're not going to go out with her. I said, go out with her. So what's the worst comes worse? You spend 2 hours, whatever it'll be, and that's it. Call it a day, call it a night. Anyway, that was my interaction with a couple 15 plus years ago. I just bumped into them at a simcha a couple of weeks ago, and they introduced me to their eighth child. It was just born. The basic issue is just to always be aware of, and it's literally called, known as just getting back to people. It's an amazing concept that, and again, it goes back to that list saga, that just because you have 37 people on your list doesn't necessarily mean that everybody has, and people are waiting for a response. A young lady could be waiting for a response, a shaman, a friend, somebody could be waiting for a response. So again, if you're thinking about it, you're investigating, you're researching in a realistic time frame, fine, that's understandable. But if, halal sadin, you know, once you've come to a decision, so just basic, Derek Harris dictates, pick up a phone, call somebody back. We live in a time, it used to be 25 years ago, you could say, I couldn't get back to on time, the payphone in the base medrash was busy, I couldn't get, I mean, from my side, let's have to get real, it's hard to claim inability to communicate this matter, as I see everybody's already text messaging their friends what I'm saying right now. So, so we move on a little bit out of the realm of just basic amigos. The Brander asked me to speak about what are the role of others. Others in the sense of friends, family members, rabbeim, other mentors we sometimes turn to. What should their role be in the dating process? So very often we find it, I would say more often in the realm of friends, we find in other situations as well. And I remember it again, it wasn't that many years ago, I was in one of those very dormitories across the street, second floor bus, I spent my time there, I was there. That was, but in those days, it was a long-term policy, you know, you took out we were there for a couple of years. And sometimes we'd have these conversations, and you know, we would hear a person would make the following kind of a statement, which had been said 15 years ago, and I'm sure is repeated the same lotion today also, that you want to go out with Plonius? Nah, absolutely not, Shaykh. Absolutely not for you. And who exactly, who exactly appointed your roommate to decide that this person is absolutely completely not for you? I can tell you countless people who are very, very happily married today, who people said about them that they're not for each other. It's not even in the ballpark. Okay, does it mean that there aren't certain days, certain suggestions that are made that really are not in the ballpark? There are some people who is really, in fact, not in. But very often, those kinds of things, blanket statements, no, it's not for you, very often made based on personality judgment, based on something I think that Dr. Pelkins is often speak a little bit about, that famous magic word called chemistry. So I think that famous, without taking away too much from Dr. Pelkins, I think that notion of chemistry is something that at the end of the day, only the two parties can decide. So I would be weary of somebody who gives you one of these very, very vague statements, nah, it's not shy for you. Why is it not shy for you? Because my third cousin went out with her, he said, and she said, and he said, and she would, da, da, da. When you start to hear those kinds of things, so it's usually a good idea to tune out. When issues come up during the course of dating, the question becomes also in the term to who can, very often people find themselves in certain obstacles, certain issues come up, some realistic problems, some sometimes can arise during dating. Who are people whose good ideas to go for, for advice, to go to for assistance in certain areas? So here also, one has to be very careful who one chooses to solicit advice from. Sometimes, the person who just got married 2 weeks ago is not necessarily the greatest world expert on interpersonal relationships. So again, just to keep that in mind, it doesn't always mean that he may not have an Etzet Tova. He may be an excellent Shadchan because his wife may have access to many, many girls who may be very close to what you're looking for. So he may play a critical role in terms of one aspect of the dating process, but in terms of sometimes tough issues come up, so one would probably be more correct to look at people with a little bit more experience, who have been involved a little bit, sometimes, and again, depends on the nature of the issue. Sometimes your rabbeim are good people to turn to, sometimes mental health professionals are good people to turn to. Again, different scenarios require different types of assistance. But one should be careful as to who one is walking around collecting advice on areas which are really very very critical in one's life. There is always, of course, a touchy topic in terms of what role parents have in terms of giving advice, soliciting advice from parents. And again, it's hard to make a broad statement. As I mentioned before, I try not to make these black and across the board statements. I think a lot of it depends on the relationship between the children and the parents. There are some children who are very comfortable talking to their parents about these types of things and who value their parents' judgments, the parents who know them, hopefully, and that can be a very, very good, positive vehicle. Sometimes it's not necessarily the case. Again, one really has to know what the relationship is between parents and children to see whether it's something that is positive. There's a certain phenomenon that exists that I think we should be aware of. You know, we're living in a time, again, living out all the other applications of this, but many of us are living in a situation where maybe objectively, or maybe we perceive it, the quote-unquote, and again, please don't misquote me on this, we're quote-unquote frummer than they were in the previous generation. So again, whether that's true or not, when the books, Sifrei Chaim, Sifrei Maaseh, only Rosh Hashanah, only HaKadosh Baruch Hu votes as to who's the tzaddik or not. So we're not gonna discuss that particular prop. But even a person has that type of perception, so just because you may think that you have a different sheet about how to heat up food on Shabbos than your parents are doing, it doesn't mean your parents don't know a lot about marriage. They may know a little bit more about marriage than you do, and it may be worth it to hear them out. Again, it doesn't always mean that you're going to see eye to eye to them. It doesn't always mean that they're necessarily going to be the people to turn to for advice, but I don't think that people should have that discounting that just because I don't necessarily see eye to eye to them in certain other areas means automatically that in the realm of interpersonal relationship that they're not people who can potentially serve as very positive guides. Moving into the realm of questions, what questions are appropriate, what questions are inappropriate, as we all know, of course, there are different societies, within the Jewish society, within the society of Shomer Torah Mitzvahs, there are different degrees of questions and different degrees of information that's attained beforehand. And again, it's not for me to judge in terms of whether you should ask questions about the type of tablecloth or not. Maybe that's my personal opinion, I'll tell you what you should ask and not ask. But again, there are clearly certain questions that are out of bounds. There are clearly certain questions that are just putting a lot of emphasis on the very trivial details and taking away from really the significance of looking at the other person, or the bathroom we said before, is a god or not so much as a hefta. So I think that's important to keep in mind. And a lot of the information, quote unquote, is important to get certain basics, that's maybe true. But at the end of the day, the kaveya, in terms of the relationship, in terms of the personality, in terms of the chemistry, so you're going to find out a lot more about that in the context of conversation with the other person, spending time with the other person, then you're going to find out from a whole list of a laundry list of different seemingly external details. I had a fascinating conversation with somebody only just a couple of days ago, so I thought I would share it with you. You'll tell me what your perception of this conversation is. I was called up, this is very often I am, with somebody who was inquiring about one of my tamidim. I don't know if she has, I don't know if she's got the nerves. One time. And for about 20 minutes, they're interrogating me about everything under the sun about this particular Talmud. So I was, very polite, and I was trying to be, one of my kids was in the bathtub, and the other kid was kind of be changed, and the other kid was screaming, but otherwise, I was trying very, very hard to be nice. And of course, they kept on, and then in the middle of the conversation, so the person said, oh, wait, I have to hang up for a sec, because I have to go play in my carpool. So at which point, I didn't have the heart to say, and you think I have nothing to do for the last 20 minutes, but it was very nice. We completed that conversation a few minutes later. They called me back. And after 20 minutes of interrogating about this particular time, which again, some of the questions were off base, some of the questions were on base, then the question turns as follows. The question was presented something along the following. Who does this particular Talmud ask Kishailas to? Who does he go to Hadracha for? So I said, I think he usually calls me to Kishailas, and he comes to talk to me every once in a while, so I think that's, the default, that's me. So then they threw the loaded question. Then they said to me, who does he turn to for his Das Torah? That was the question. So I responded, I think to me. So the following response was, I think I got the exact quote. Well, tell me then, who are you? That was the question. To which point it took me another 20 minutes to read my resume. I learned from Shiva's Kermi Avna, and I met Smita from YU. And so at that point I realized that what we had crossed was clearly the bridge of inappropriate questions at that point, in the sense of it was no longer an issue of references of the person, it was references of the person, and kahena the kahena the kahena. So I think just interesting, sometimes the bizarre extreme can bring us back a little bit to the sense of reality. Question of a grander we'll suppose, which I'll conclude with this, just the media approach, is you know, people who meet in different types of venues and different types of events and different types of settings. Again, I think that there's a certain degree of individuality in this. There are different people who may feel comfortable in different settings. And some people feel more comfortable in the quote-unquote traditional shotgun sense. And again, not the images necessarily of matchmaker, but if, you know, what we call the shotgun sense of common friends or a rebbe or certain things of that nature. And then there are other people who feel a little bit more comfortable doing things in other ways. Yeah, I think that within the spirit of Kedusha, within the spirit of the Torah, within the guidelines of Tznius, which of course have to be observed under all types of settings and all types of dating experiences, so there are different approaches, and there are some people who feel more comfortable in other types of less quote unquote pressurized settings. That was part of some of the work that we've been doing over the last year or so, is to try to open up some of these possibilities. Again, Kedusha, Batara, Api Das Torah, you can tell everybody, trying to do things in the proper, appropriate fashion that to enable people who feel more comfortable in terms of events. The issue of online dating has been put into practice over the last several months. Again, there are different things work for different people, but I think that's important to realize that. And people shouldn't make so many judgment calls about, well, you know, we hear this all the time, well, if this girl went to that event, or if this girl is signed up in such and such moment, that must indicate something about her. It usually indicates one thing, which is a very positive thing, that she wants to get married, which is what the emotional wants her to want to do. So if she feels that this is the way to reach that, and again, I'm talking about within certain guidelines, within Torah guidelines, so then I don't think that we should hold that necessarily as a yardstick in terms of measuring of the person. Again, just to conclude that Hagash Luchum Ramon, we don't really know how HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Cheshbonos are in all areas of our life, of course, particularly in this most delicate area. We never know who's going to be the Matzliach as the Shachan. Remember, somewhat of a humorous story. It was told to me by a certain God, I won't mention my name, a certain God who told me the story himself. He said to me that he was a Talmud of Ramesha, and Ramesha sent him to out of town, a community, to be a shaykhid at a young age, and he wasn't married, and he was very concerned to go. After all, shidduchim, how's he going to be married in this place? And Ramesha said, don't worry, we'll find your shidduch. So apparently in the early years, when he was out of that community, he used to come on the train every couple of weeks, he would schlep back to New York, and Ramesha would have a list ready for him. Ramesha would have different people for him to go out with. He said this was going on for a couple of months, and he said that the mice didn't work. And then this particular person's grandmother met some girl in an elevator or something, and they were married for 50 years. So this particular Rav said to me, he said, Ramesh was the Golem Ador, he was the Pesach Ador, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted this person's grandmother to be the Shalich. It's not a steamer name, man. You never know who's going to be the Shalich Hashem. So again, it doesn't mean that we automatically listen to every single suggestion, but we should take into consideration that we never openly know where it's going to come from. Yes, sometimes people who know you more from a better and longer may have it inside, which may very well be true. But just to conclude, that the two people who were instrumental in setting the wife and myself up, so one of them knew me, and he knew me had met me maybe 25 years before or something, and one of them knew my wife, and the two of them, neither of them knew either one of us, and it was like a heads and tails kind of thing. This one said I have a boy, this one said I have a girl. That was basically the common denominator of Baruch Hashem. I'm here speaking about dating after all these years with a smile on my face. So anyway, I don't want him. I wish everybody a lot of Hatzlach in this area, and I hope that Kedush Baruch should grant us all a Seyat Nishma.
Thank you. Talking about crossing the line, I remember there was a time in which somebody was checking out the young lady, checked out the family so much that they found a survivor of the Holocaust from the family that they didn't know had survived the Holocaust. I want to, before introducing Dr. Pelkowitz, I want to to Rabbi Twersky, who, as was obvious, has a little trouble at this point in time talking, but was willing to come and participate fully in this, to thank him. Before we introduce our next speaker, to thank him in the following context. Around a year ago or so, we had this idea of creating this Torah-focused opportunity for young men and young women who are alumni from Yeshiva University, from Stern College, and from Reitz, and from Yeshiva College, to have the opportunity to meet each other in Torah-appropriate venues. Not just one venue, but Torah-appropriate venues. Whether it was shiurim given by Rashi Yeshiva called Torah Tavitz, in which there are communications afterwards between young men and young women, whether it is through dating connectors as well as the online dating system, whether it's Shabbatones. We had a Shabbaton a few weeks ago in which there are 25 couples now dating, and I can tell you that we had the opportunity for Rabbi Rebbetzin Sapolsky to be the Torah personalities on that Shabbaton. Next year, he's got to run the next Shabbaton. We already have a Rosh Yeshiva who has requested to be the Torah personality in that, and that's Rabbi Rebbetzin Schechter. They will be the Torah personalities in that Shabbaton. And so there's a plethora of opportunities for you to connect in various ways. But in the beginning stages of this, there were a few people who were Meshubad L'Davar Achad, and that includes Rebbetzin Sapolsky. I guarantee you that Rabbi Sapolsky gave more than one bath to his children during those, literally during those, that time that Rebbetzin Sapolsky worked on this, literally Yom Kalila. And I want to thank her, and I want to thank Lisa Barinholtz for being the behind the scenes person and making sure that everything happens. And thank Rabbi Kalinsky, who I'm not sure is here or not, but he really also was a true partner in the beginning of this process and putting this together. And to thank Javi Hagler, who will continue on the work of Rabbi Kalinsky in playing the various programs that we have. The mental health professionals that we turn to, the postkin that we have is Rebbetzin Dr. Sapolsky and Dr. Belkowitz. And Dr. Belkowitz, despite his very, very busy schedule, really gave of his time and his energy to train the dating connectors, to train Efshat Khanim, and to work with us in really creating a structured approach. And really, all of the, please God, more than we already have three engagements, but please God, the future engagements are really due to his hard work. And I really wanted to take this opportunity to thank Dr. Belkowitz for putting in all the hard time in getting YU Connects off the ground, and to let him know that we plan on calling you and still interacting with you, and we just want to thank you for the work that you've done for us. Thank you, Dr. Belkowitz. On that note, we thought that perhaps if you wish to comment on some of the questions that I asked the Rosh Yeshiva heretofore, we would appreciate that. And also, if you could give us a brief synopsis of the appropriate communication skills necessary to develop before and during dating, skills which will serve as building blocks of relationships, and they won't only help us with dating, but they'll also create and empower beautiful marriages. If you can share with us some of the basic ideas of that, we would greatly appreciate that, Dr. Hovitz.
Thank you. First of all, let me apologize for the sunglasses. This isn't part of a new image I'm trying to do. Recovering from eye surgery. And also want to thank most pivotal person who was left out, Rabbi Brander's remark, I'm sorry, Brander himself, who was nurtured this and incubated it and developed it right from the beginning. Just a couple of thoughts bouncing off before I get to the communication part. I was thinking in terms of some of the initial questions. What is it that matters? What is it that needs to be done also in terms of preparing? And to talk about it more from a secular and psychological standpoint, what a lot of it boils down to is just echoing what's been said until now, is the shared vision and dream is one of the most important predictors. Turns out there's a new body of research in the positive psychology field that shows that when you get in touch with your goals, when you get in touch with your own personal vision and dream, your happiness levels go up. And those dreams are more likely to be fulfilled. It says initially, Ve'im chazon yifara'am. Without that vision thing, you just kind of disintegrate. You can't go on. And P.S. Esner, Rebbe used to actually have his talmidim set six-month goals for themselves. When it comes to dating, that's exactly one of the core issues that you have to know. You don't have to know exactly where you're going to end up. You're going to be sharing a whole life together. And it's very hard to predict life's about change. I would certainly hope that it would be almost impossible to predict exactly what kind of yeshiva you're going to send your kids to, whether you're going to spend your lives here or in Eretz Yisrael. And there are a lot of other issues that are very hard to know exactly. But in terms of having core knowledge of who you are and where you're going, that is something that you then have to bounce off the women that you're going out with to try to figure out if that's a shared vision and dream that you can carry on together. Because there's no more important issue. And in terms of timing, that's a lot of what goes into timing. Sometimes people just aren't ready to do that. And sometimes they need to grow a little bit more themselves internally before they're at that point. So that's just by way of that piece. A related area is, in terms of predictors, it was hinted at before, is the chemistry issue, the physical attraction issue as well. It's very interesting. Research is very clear. Many of you know this research, but I'll say it anyway. It turns out that In the secular world, when people have a physical relationship, which is, of course, the norm, it actually throws a lot of noise in the system. The research is very clear. When people live together before they get married, when they have a full-blown physical relationship before they get married, it actually lessens the chances of that relationship having long-term success. Actually, when couples actually live together before they're married, the likelihood of a woman at some point in the future being unfaithful to her husband are among the many, many findings that show that early premature physical relationships has the power to pull us away and distract us from figuring out who we really are and what the relationship is really about. Similarly, very strong romantic relationships, when you're head over heels in love with each other in this intense, romantic, starry-eyed way, that's actually not necessarily something that you want to look for. I mean, it's habit wonderful, but it's not necessarily a terrific predictor. There's some research evidence that shows that it's actually, it can be a little bit destructive to believe that that has to be there. There's, in America, something called the myth of the instant soulmate. 95% of Americans believe that you find your basher and you have an instant soulmate, when in fact, we all know that that's not the way relationships are built. Relationships are built over the mutual giving. The word natan is a palindrome. You give, you get back, you give, and you get back, and that ahavahav building of the relationship is what happens over time. And through that, both the physical relationship, the physical attraction, and the real cement and building blocks that relationships are built on start to grow. So one of the most common questions I get when guys look at me Friday morning with that nauseous look after pastoral psychology, want to talk to me, and I know it's going to be about dating questions, okay? And one of the most common questions I get when people are struggling is not quite having trouble, not being sure, is she the right person? I'm kind of attracted, I'm not fully attracted. And I just wanted to let you know that often the attraction grows through the mutual giving and over time. Obviously, there has to be a basic attraction, but that's something that develops over time. Number three, just in terms of one other background information piece I wanted to talk about, is one of the questions asked early on this evening was about financial dependence on parents. And I wanted to frame that in a wider context. There's a fascinating new set of research showing that both in the United States, Canada, and Europe, and throughout much of the modern world, there's been a sea change in the way people your age define adulthood. So it's not just the firm world that has an extended period of financial dependence on parents. It's happening everywhere, where young adults are waiting longer and longer to figure out what they want to do with their lives and to become financially independent. So you're in good company when you pass set on a different path than your parents did in terms of trying to figure out where you want to go and allowing yourself to be dependent financially for longer periods of time. I'm not taking a stance on it, you should do it or you shouldn't do it, but it's something that it has become part of a much more global trend that is actually a fascinating trend that we always think it's just us. But the reality is that there are changes that dovetail nicely with all this and normalize it. So, and sometimes it takes strength to be dependent for a longer period of time. So I just wanted to contextualize that a little bit in the wider research. Three points I want to make about communication, which is what I've been asked to talk about. Point number one is rather obvious, but just tonight, before I walked in, somebody told me about a date he recently heard about where basically the guy spent the entire time on his BlackBerry and on his cell phone and pretty much talking about himself. Didn't ask the woman he had gone out with a single question about herself. And it's obvious, but it needs to be said. In terms of the essence of communication, to be understood, first understand, you need to spend a lot of time developing the ability to listen, the ability to hear, the ability to show an interest in the life of the person who you're taking at. That's the only way you're going to be able to figure out if this is somebody you could possibly share a life with. And I understand that sometimes hard. I'm very anxious. Sometimes when people are anxious, they develop verbal diarrhea and just talk on and on and on. Sometimes when they're anxious, they clam up and don't say anything. And that's totally normal. But the reality is that try as carefully as you can to spend at least part of the time when you're dating to really understand who she is, what she's interested in, to listen. You've heard me say this before, some of you. The word ozeb is tied etymologically with the word maznayim, the scale, right? The word maznayim has ozeb embedded in it. And there's something very balancing about listening to something. When somebody is listened to and feels validated, it's one of the ingredients that helps cement the beginnings of a connection. There's this beautiful Rav Shem Shneifel Hirsch on the brachos of Yaakov to his sons, where he says, you know, when you look at the brachos carefully, they really are descriptions. They're not so much blessings as they're dead-on descriptions of the characteristics of each of the sons. And Rav Hirsch goes on to say, because there's no greater bracha when somebody gets you. So in terms of that first ingredient of communication, it's listening. making her feel heard, making her feel understood. And at the very beginning, it's just asking a lot of questions. So they say, what's the essence of a good conversationalist? It's ironic. You know what makes somebody an excellent conversationalist? It's listening. It's the ability to listen. It's not what you say. It's your ability to hear and to show genuine interest in the other person. Of course you have to talk about yourself, but it should be balanced with the ability to take in and the scale of listening and validating and hearing. So that's point number one. Point number two is, again, something that you all know, but it's important to talk about, and that's that after however many years you've learned in Eretz Yisrael, however many years you're in the Beis Medrash, you develop, even more than the average guy, a male-based communication style. Guys really do communicate differently than women do. Okay, so in one of the classic research studies on how men and women communicate differently, marital therapy researcher took biofeedback measures of husbands and wives as they fought. Women, the more they talked about what they were upset about, the more their blood pressure went down, the more their pulse rate went down, and the more they chilled down. Men, the more they talked with their wives about the same issue, the more their pulse rate shot up, the more their blood pressure shot up, and they felt sick for a couple of hours later. It took them hours afterwards to regulate. So the very thing that's a source of refuah for a woman, which is to talk things out about relationships, can make men sick. And that's not good or bad, it's just different. Men and women are different, you know, and a lot of the way we grow, one of the leading marital therapy researchers talks about marriage, the people growing machine. You grow through that connection by developing that side of yourself to learn how to talk, to learn how to listen, and to learn that women aren't necessarily always into problem-solving issues, but they're into talking and talking about relationships. You know, what is it? I think the Bartonura said that the word "nisuin" has embedded in it a double meaning. The differences that are inherent between men and women can either be a masa, a burden that wears us down, or it could be a mess. It could be a banner or a miracle that we hold high when we're able to transcend those differences and grow through them. You grow through learning how to communicate with a woman. You grow through learning how to listen and learning how to develop a muscle that you don't necessarily develop when you're talking things out with your parusa or with your roommate. And that's a good thing. So remember that those gender differences are there. Remember that a lot of what it takes to build a relationship is to listen and to talk. And the third issue is something that's pretty obvious, and with this I'll end, because I think we're going to have discussion, right?
Good question.
Questions. With this I'll end is, again, it's obvious, but I hinted at it before with the story about the guy going out with his BlackBerry. And that's the need to be present. It's a mahala of this era. That it's very, very hard to be in the same place. I once heard Shmuel Kamenetsky say that years ago he didn't allow cell phones in the Philadelphia yeshiva because he said if you have a cell phone in the Philadelphia yeshiva, you're not in the Philadelphia yeshiva, right? If you're walking around with your cell phone and it's on during the day, you're on constantly, you're not really there. And it's not only disrespectful, but it's a way of sort of pulling away from the very essence of the kind of communication that is necessary in order to grow and build a relationship and in order to figure out if you could share a life together. So I can't emphasize enough how important it is to disconnect from those external noise of our lives. To shut off the BlackBerry, shut off the Trio, shut off the texting. Just be there with the person. My wife's law firm had a statistic that they shared a couple of years ago at their retreat that the lawyers there get a million pieces of email a week. Okay? A million pieces of email a week. And then you think about the incredible amount of information that comes in and the incredible amount of interference that comes in with the ability to connect, right? So I said my father's name in this issue. It's an age of information with that knowledge, communication with that connection. Here we're talking about that when you're dating, you need to communicate with connection. To communicate with connection, you have to really be there. You have to be there with your ears, you have to be there with your heart, and you have to be there with undivided attention, because that's the only way you're going to be able to figure out whether or not this is a person who could share that vision and dream with. So let's move on, and I'm sure there are plenty of other questions.
Thank you, Dr. Pelkowitz.